Fraterna y su tres. And this is laser. So good afternoon. I think it's vacation period, but thank you for being here. I mean, I have spoken from this place along, you know, many times, so this is something, a familiar wicket. You, of course, must be familiar with this famous British novelist in the 19th century called Jane Austen. And I, you know, many seminars, many speeches begin with her, the first line of her other, the most popular novel, Pride and Prejudice. So it is actually, that statement can be twisted, that any young person with a good mobile app, moving towards a great fortune, okay, today. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with this stand-up comedian whom I watched a lot in on YouTube, called Megan Farsad, who is a Iranian, or the Americans say Iranian American stand-up comedian, who says that she has a special liking for Jewish young men, and they keep impressing her with various things. So one of them showed her a mobile app, said that today I have 20,000 downloads and the valuation of my company is going up. Said basically you people are wasting time, she told him, and directly create a mobile app which will generate money. So with that, let's sort of talk about what is Zensar. And I decided to sort of take up this mentoring this startup, new startup, after a frustrating time with the public sector bank for 2 years, where nothing happened and the politicians and RBI finally decided that we should, there's no real need for a digital only bank in a poor country like ours. So I decided that let me look at this mentoring startup, where both the CEO and the CTO had worked with me 15 years ago. So I'm there as Zensar, basically a Singapore-based company, because our CEO stays there. The software development unit is in Villeparle, where we all work, I and Natasha. And this is a mobile thing. I mean, I come from a very strong enterprise computing background, and coming to mobile development, mobile app development, was something odd for me. But I have dabbled in the mobile development in the past. I mean, some places as a thinker, and some places, of course, as an implementer. So 20 years ago, when we had only feature phones, I mean, there was only smart thing about a phone was the SIM card. And what particularly attracted me towards a mobile phone was that mobile phone can be also used as a reader of various types of cards, and it's also a smart card reader with a display and a keyboard. So So literally it can do many functions that a computer does, right? Of course now it has become all powerful, but even 20 years ago. So in fact, just as we have RBI enforcing the two-factor authentication, that we have this one-time password OTP on through SMS. Similarly, we looked at mobile phone then as a device which helps authenticating a person. So the principle which one derives from that is mobile phone is inherently a personal device, right? I mean, even 20 years ago you didn't give it to your family members or your friends or your wife unless there was a medical emergency, and now everybody has a mobile phone. So Zensung CEO 3 years back decided that he left his cushy job from a multinational bank and decided that he will do something for road safety, because he has been dealing with insurance companies in and around Singapore. So these numbers are very striking, okay. If you 1.39 million people die, and it's increasing, you know. I mean, few years ago, just two, three years ago, it was as much as 1.25 million, and you know, this almost 10% increased in last 2 years, and about 3,000 deaths. And WHO website, if you see, they have beautiful graphics on this subject. And one of the things is most countries where, you know, there is a formal GDP, up to 3% of GDP is lost. Okay, this is a measurable loss. I mean, it's not counting the loss of lives, etc. So, of course, chartered accountant can, you know, put a value on that also. But this is 3% is what, you know, of GDP, which is huge, humongous value, right? So our CEO started this company 3 years ago with, you know, with this vision that, you know, how do we minimize these losses that happen, right? And the most important thing which he found is that driving behavior plays a crucial role. I mean, there are other things, we will talk about other aspects of safe driving, but driving behavior is what leads to serious accidents. I mean, WHO website, I sort of urge all of you to have a look, because you know, this is a very topic that touches everybody, and it could touch us tomorrow if not it has not happened. So there is a statistics for rich countries, middle income countries like ours, and poor countries the cars are not too many. The rich countries, there are many cars, but the good regulations, and therefore the of course, because of the speed factor, there are many fatal accidents. But it's the middle income countries where, you know, and this is where our CEO chose these markets, okay, the ASEAN region, you know, Indonesia, Vietnam, Philippines. We are not touching India because it's a very complex market, but there are some 5 African nations, Middle East. So it's middle income countries where the regulations, the cars are also in large numbers, but the regulations are not that strict. So we decided that we would help, you know, this middle income countries. So 3 things: better driving, improve road safety, and reduce pollution, right? I mean, many of these things we are just monitoring, we are not doing, and we'll talk about all these factors. Now many of you may be wondering why we decided to have 2 speakers for this. I mean, you know, I represent the present and the past of these techniques, and Mitasha represents the future. So she will talk about the AIML part, okay, which is something new. I, of course, after leaving TFR for the first time, I'm planned to code. So Mitasha set up a Python environment on my laptop. So I hope to code. Nobody allowed me to code for 24 years after, you know, leaving TIFR. So I am going to speak about the present, what we have achieved so far. Now coming back to this mobile phones, okay, I mean I have had some experience, as I told you, 20 years ago in embedding my mobile digital signatures. 3 years ago I actually created a, you know, any of you who are IDBI customers can look at this Abhay app, which was created by me, which allows you to basically set limits, switch off and switch on your debit card, etc. So I have worked on certain aspects, but just look at the smart mobile phone, you know, smartphone. It encompasses so many things that we did and use till recently. Even 2010, we used many devices, you know, and so, you know, apart from personal nature, mobile phone is this one. I mean, whether you take, you know, gaming, audio, reading books, displays, you know, timekeeping, phone of course, I mean, it's something which we forget, you know, television, we watch films, it is a become, and yeah, the millennials even talk about, you know, I have a better camera on my phone than you have. So, in that's a sort of comparison parameter. Plus, this whole thing of iPad. So, music is also sort of listening to music. So, I mean, smartphones have replaced literally everything. I mean, we used to have digital diaries, which was in 90s, we used to have pagers and a mobile phone and a laptop. So, you know, good executive used to be a digital donkey carrying so many gadgets. Now it's like replaced by this one. And I think here not too many old timers are there, but some of the computers which used to occupy the entire wings of TIFR, okay, my mobile phone is probably as or more powerful than, you know, computing device. I mean, 20 years ago, those who are mathematically minded, we had you know, for smart, for digital signatures, you know, it was necessary to look for encryption techniques like elliptical curves. Today, of course, in bitcoins and blockchain, it has become standard, but that time just lack of processing, you know, forced us to use elliptical curves. Now, today, you know, you could do many more things with the mobile phone because of the sheer computing power. Now, what is Internet of Things? I mean, I was one of the fortunates to listen to, you know, a person who is known as originator of Java, you know, James Gosling, you know, some of you who, so Gosling actually invented Java, not for the internet web programming, not for creating websites, not for creating, you know, commercial banking websites or any. He created actually Java for, you know, a platform independent language for, you know, your microwave ovens, washing machines, electric irons, you know, all the household gadgets. But, you know, I met him in 2002 and he said that, no, I did not invent this language, I invented this language for. So he had said that, you know, his dream, his vision was that every device must have an IP address, right, and it should be able to communicate with each other, okay, and you should be able to control those devices wherever you are. Now all that is not possible today. TCP/IP protocol, the internet protocol, is you know, so widespread that we could have things which are, you know, once you have an IP address, you can control that device from anywhere. So if you look at, you know, in-flight services, right? I mean, for example, the movies that we watch in a long flight, correct? Everybody watches the movie from wherever he wants to, you know, and it's basically, it's a service. Right? I mean, of course, we see much many more sophisticated services like Netflix or Amazon Prime now. Personal computers, of course, communicate if there is, you know, communicate with our mobile phones, communicate with various devices at home, could listen to music, home lighting, you know, wearable technologies, and you can, you know, something which is standard today, switching off, switching on of various devices, etc. So, you know, every device having IP address, right? I mean, every device actually is nothing but a computer. Now, you know, I remember in this very room, Professor Pitke told us now that, you know, telephone is a computer, right? First, when you introduced us to digital telephones, so you have to actually play a audio file for the ringtone, right? You lift. And once upon a time, we used to have electromechanical devices where some carbon particles used to vibrate and we used to get that voice, right? So you lift a phone and you have to play. So tomorrow there will be electric vehicles, but you know, I still want that experience of riding a bullet. So I play a, you know, the sound that a internal combustion machine makes, I just play an audio file. Anyway, coming back to our topic, Kevin Ashton has said that, you know, basically it should be totally oblivious to Internet of Things should be oblivious to the user. I mean, it should just communicate in the background, you know, without really controlling it, right? So they should create some kind of an ad hoc network of their own. Okay. Now, when I was in Infosys, we actually dabbled with some ad hoc networks, and that time we felt 16-17 years ago that noise will just kill such networks. Now there are better techniques of killing noise, you know, what are called as Kalman filters and all that, and therefore it's all possible that often you know, without a human being really, a user, end user really knowing it, you could actually, these networks, the Internet of Things could, you know, make things happen, right? Now, telematics is, you know, vaguely defined term, it's used and more abused. Telematics is anything to do with electronics and vehicles put together, computers, vehicles, computer science, all, you know. So, the boxed thing, items which you see is, you know, what we have attempting to do, we are doing already. There are other things, of course, which we are not doing, you know, but there are, of course, many other things. Is our one fellow research student, you know, I, Sukant, and this other third person called Rajiv Ramanan, he is actually working on some of the things in Ford Motors, temperature monitoring, fuel tracking, and in his American accent, he tells me he has filed patents. So, he is working on some of the areas, but okay, we have some of the things which we have achieved, which will, you know, I'll actually show you, is that we can sort of send signals, alerts to, you know, so that in case of an accident, we can send a nearest driver, we can tell you your trip history, we can have, you know, assistance if you require, roadside assistance, ambulance can be sent. Geofencing is a virtual way of fencing latitudes and longitudes. So, it has use, it can be used in, you know, controlling fleets like Ola and Uber. You know, you don't want a vehicle to go outside Mumbai's municipal limits. So, you can do geofencing. And gamification is something which, you know, we have created competitions using our app that I'll come to. So anything that is boxed, is, you know, driver behavior, carbon many emissions, fuel consumption. You know, some countries idling of an engine is a criminal offense, like Singapore. If unnecessarily, if you keep your car on while parking for more than 2 minutes, you can be, you know, charged or fined. So many things which we are doing here. Coming to so what is our application useful for? One is of course insurance. If you are a better driver, and that's what Mindasha will cover. If you are a better driver, why should you pay, you know, as a bad driver? Today there is no sort of distinguishing between a good driver and a bad driver. So you know, your driving behavior, you know, and I will define, I'll show you on the so one is the auto insurance. Second is, you know, big companies, you know, oil companies which have tens of thousands of tankers, you know, manage their drivers. There are no other go except you know, human witnesses or delays that occur. But apart from that, there is literally no way of sort of monitoring behavior of a driver. And third thing is, you know, it's our attempt that, you know, actually to collect more data. We, you know, anybody, they can download this application for India, and you can start your own competition. So, you know, so in fact, we are talking to Harley Davidson associations in worldwide. You know, they are very prominent. So, we can sort of create competitions if required. Now, there is, after every car that is produced post 2014, it is mandatory world over to have a OBD, which is called an onboard diagnostic device. Now, it, like I mentioned Rajiv, Rajiv actually uses this device. Now, this device of course has to connect to something else, right? I mean, we also have some models which work, you know, there is a Bluetooth connection between this device and our application, that's, we allow that. And the advantage of this is, of course, you know, the moment you switch on the vehicle, our application gets a signal to start, right? Otherwise, if you use purely a smartphone based application, you have to be diligent enough to start a trip or end a trip and end a trip, okay? So, but here the powering on, you know, you know, there is a simultaneous beginning. But there are companies which say, okay, you give us a device which will just sit here and we will talk, we know, we will analyze the data on a server later. So, we have done that for certain companies, especially in Indonesia. Now, one of the disadvantages of having a pure hardware with OBD is, one is of course OBD devices which communicate are more expensive, and since it's China, there is no, I can't tell you that it costs X dollars. I mean, if I buy a million of them, it could cost $1. If I buy one of it, you know, it could be $200. Another thing is, phone usage is detected only by a smartphone. So, you know, we firmly believe, and you know, whatever literature survey we have done, and mainly done by Mintasha, is that distracted driving is what leads to more accident. So, how many times you spoke on a phone, which we will come to, and that the pure hardware device doesn't give, okay, or you texted on the phone, you know, can you sort of, we have ways of detecting, you know, that the phone was actually used while driving, okay. So, but OBD is a very good device for a cap, you know, sort of audience which is like a fleet management, you know, because I can insist on, you know, the device that has to be that has to communicate with either a server or this. I put a GSM receiver here and all that, it directly communicates to the server or something, or with a Bluetooth to a mobile app, right. So, it provides 48 parameters. So, if you really want how good a car is maintained, OBD is definitely better, okay. But if you want a driver behavior, smartphone is the better way to
sort of monitor the behavior of a driver. Now, we using GPS sensor. Okay, here we in that in asset colloquium, I think few months back, Dr. Unnikrishnan spoke about in detail about spatial relativity, general relativity aspects, and atomic clocks on the satellites through which the mobile GPS sensor communicates. And we basically look at, you know, the four parameters that come from the GPS data: latitude, longitude, so your position, your speed, okay, and heading is nothing but the direction. Now, our application actually every 2 seconds keeps checking these sensors, and if there is a change, then we can even collect data sub 2 seconds. Like, so every second, you know, if there is a change, okay, the sensors on the mobile phone check for all this. So today, what we have achieved today, and it's sort of popular amongst insurance companies and ASEAN, is based on GPS sensors. Okay, now the sensors which Mitasha is sort of going to look at, and she's already collecting data. We didn't have in our first version of our application, we didn't look at any of these things. Okay, and as Sukant, I told you about, you know, we have 3 sensors in a typical high-end phone. Most phones, Android phones, only has accelerometer. So, you know, you have to doubly integrate to get distance, singly integrate to get this one. So, as you know, I'm using calculus again. So, there's a gyroscope and there's a magnetometer. So, Mitasha will share some of the early data that we have. So these 4 sensors are there to monitor, you know, the driving behavior. We also find that iOS is a far more superior platform. It's expensive, you know, but it allows us to choose a frame of reference and all that, which is not there in Android. I mean, Android of course gives you parameters with respect to magnetic north. But Android can, you can allows you, you know, geographical north, magnetic north, etc., etc. So, only thing is, you know, Apple is the new Microsoft in some sense. So, therefore, you know, it sort of doesn't share too much information. So, T stands for Tugu, which is the, you know, top insurance company in Indonesia. So, in India, if you go to app stores, you know, of Android or iOS, Apple store, you will find this under the name of DriveSung. Okay. So, this is an application which is, you know, for the Indonesian company, and we sort of collect sensor data and analyze it and feed it back online to the user. So, you know, the user knows that though he is not supposed to look at the camera, but his behavior, his sensor is, you know, is there on the server, as well as the application also notes down the driving, you know, any mistakes that he has made, etc. Of course, he can completely analyze his trip post the trip is over. Okay, that I will sort of show. So, this is how, what our app is. Okay, actually, I will show you, you know, replay of a trip. This is Western Express Highway, right?
Yeah, Western Express.
Anyway, I'll stop you. I mean, it's like so basically what we're measuring, okay, I think I'll show you on this only, is harsh acceleration. Okay, these are all parameterizable. What harsh acceleration, every, you know, any customer of yours can define. What is harsh braking, lane changing with, you know, what speed, right? I mean, you know, you want the lane to be if the lane is changed at 50, 60 kilometers per hour speed, then it's harsh cornering, right? Or It depends, it's a parameter which every company can define. How many phone calls did you make while driving? Right? Now, of course, some people might say that, you know, the phone call, you know, I was like, he was, may not be a driver, you know, he's just monitoring the driver's behavior. So that also we have, you know, Mitasha has created a technique which will tell us whether the person was driving or not driving. And overspeed. Now, overspeed is we are basically reading from a Google API, and we depend a lot on Google. We pay a lot of money every month to Google that how, you know, every road Google has assigned a maximum speed limit. So, if you exceed that speed, right, you know, many countries like this is the middle income country paradigm, that where Indonesia 80 kilometers is considered to be the speed limit, though Google says that really safe speed limit on that road is 50 kilometers. Okay, so Google does all that research. Google is a, you know, the best map company at the moment. So you know, unfortunately there are certain Google APIs which go against us, you know, which and also Apple is raising a lot of issues on privacy. So we have constant discussion with these companies. We also have a equivalent like T-Drive, we have T-Ride for a motorcycle man, and normally motorcyclists don't play with their too much with their app because they don't have the time to play, they can't put it on their so Google has an API called Map to Road. I mean, this is just you know, make you more well versed with our app, is that and so it sort of, the road is, you know, the path which this clearly this one is mapped to the most popular road, and therefore we sometimes see a motorcyclist coming from south north Bombay to south Bombay has gone over the early ceiling where he is not legally allowed. Anyway, so we are trying to solve these problems with help of other sensors. Okay, so this is what I covered: harsh acceleration, harsh braking, harsh cornering, overspeeding and phone calls. Okay, now Mitasha will take over. You know, this is a running app which is this one, but now what we plan to do, my colleague will take you. Come, Mitasha. Yeah, he'll help you.
निकल गया ओके एम आई ऑडिबल एट द बैक या हाय एवरीवन आई एम मिताशा एंड आई एम द डेटा एनालिस्ट एट Zensung एंड लेट मी शो यू हाउ वी आर यूजिंग डेटा टू जनरेट इनसाइट्स सो डॉक्टर अदरकर स्पोक अबाउट सेंसर एंड व्हाट वी डू. But we want to take it to the next level in auto insurance. So basically, for your premiums for your cars, a lot of the variables that are considered traditional, like your demographics, the age, gender, or the vehicle details that your car has, are kind of against you. If you were, say, in your early 20s, owning a red sports car, your premiums would be more just because these variables are not under your control. We want to introduce a new variable, that's your driving pattern. What if, I mean, if you were a good driver, you, these variables should not be against you. That is why we want to introduce a new variable so that you can get better premiums. The way you want to do this is to use IoT data that we are collecting from the app. And to do that, we need to understand why IoT data is different from other types of data, like your business data or the research data. Firstly, IoT data is not a snapshot. It's a continuous stream of data. Packets are data strings, like the data sensors that we collect, the GPS sensors that we collect. It is a continuous stream. Every second, there is data incoming on the system. And comparatively, the volume of this data is higher. Secondly, this data is raw data from the sensors. So compared to business data, this data is dirty and it needs a lot of cleaning before any analysis can be done. Another thing about IoT data, which is related to Internet of Things, is that it has a time series element. A pattern such as whether you're driving is smoother towards the beginning of your trip compared to the end of a trip, or if it's an industrial IoT use case, maybe the machine that is sending data, maybe the prediction that, you know, when it goes down or it shuts down, is it during the day, what time? So it has a time series element to it. And lastly, not just that the sensor is sending data to the server or the command center, there is also a command center relaying information back to the sensors. Imagine that you had a thermostat, suppose in your smartphone right now, which was collecting data of the temperature of the room every second. And that temperature was being sent to the server, where there's a small logic written that as soon as the temperature of the room drops below 20 degrees, the server needs to send information back to the sensor to send an alarm. This means this happens online, and it's a bi-directional communication. That is why IoT data is different from other types of data. So, keeping this in mind, how do we deal with this kind of data? And how do these hype words figure into this problem? This is basically an overview of artificial intelligence is a lot of things. It could be computer vision, speech recognition, natural language processing. A lot of these abilities that we humans take for granted. It is different for machines to learn the way we learn. So, machine learning is a type of tool that is used to teach the machines these activities. And a lot of machine learning is dependent on pattern recognition and matching. Lastly, deep learning is a subset of machine learning that uses neural networks to solve problems. And this deep learning is very computationally intensive. This is to give an overview of how data and what tools can be used. And depending on your data and the type of problem that you're trying to solve, machine learning can be divided into three ways of machine learning: supervised, unsupervised, and reinforcement. So basically, supervised learning is when I tell the computer the labels to the data. A very simple example would be if I wanted to know the mails that I get, if they're spam or not. That is what all Gmail does for you, right? Whether the mail that you've received, it will classify it as spam or not. So if I wanted to train my models to be able to classify that machine learning as a whether it's spam or not, in supervised learning, I will tell it, hey, look, model, here are a set of mails. They are spam. I know that because I'll be using that data to teach the model. So this is spam mail. The machine will look at these mails and try to understand the characteristics of those mails. Then I will tell the machine, okay, look at these bunch of mails. They are not spam mails. And again, it will know, okay, not spam mails, characteristics. It's going to learn from the two sets. And later in time, when I want to be able to predict for a given mail that I don't know, okay, you know what, now I've received a new mail and I don't know, then the machine will be able to tell because it has learned characteristics of both set of data. As opposed to unsupervised, where I'm just like, look, machine, these are a set of mails, but I don't know, I haven't labeled them yet. I don't know which one is spam, which one is not spam, but you have to learn from this data. In that case, what will happen is the unsupervised machine learning, it would form clusters of similar mails that it thinks are similar on some attributes that I have not defined. So imagine if my mail, my inbox just had mails from say Mr. Dr. Adarkar and my mom, and I ask it to do an unsupervised training on those mails, then it might just classify all mails from Dr. Adarkar, all mails from mom. However, it would not be able to tell me why this classification, or is it actually, why did it choose to segregate the mails on this characteristics. And lastly, reinforcement learning. This is the one that makes all the headlines every day about machine learning. This is where your computer tries to take decisions in a dynamic environment by repeated trial and error. What I mean by that is that if I wanted to train my model in a, say, I wanted it to play a strategic video game where it has to take decisions depending on the environment in the video game to be able to win an award at the end. Depending on the reward, the award at the end, it gives some weights to the decisions it has taken. And then it keeps playing that game again and again to analyze the decisions that it has taken, whether they led to the award, what kind of decisions would be the best optimized way to win the game. With that background, this is what my analytics flow at Zensim looks like. Keeping that as the background, obviously I start with lots of data collection. I mean, I need lots of data to analyze patterns and to be able to make those classifications, because a smaller set of data would not statistically be able to tell if there is an actual difference in the two classifications or regression of whatever algorithm or use case that I'm trying to solve. But this data that I get is not always clean, and it needs a lot of manipulation for my algorithms to be able to ingest it. Algorithms have a set way that it digests data, so it needs manipulation and cleaning. Then training models. Models, like I said, could be of three different types, and under them there are more algorithms. The one that I explained about spam and non-spam was a classification algorithm, but you could also have the classic regression. There are neural networks. There are cluster making algorithms. That depends on your use case. Next is test data. What I mean by that is there is always data that I'm using to train my model, and then there always be some data that I never show the model until it's ready. I need to use this test data to determine how well my model is working. It's called test and train data. How much ever data I collect from my use cases, I always divide it into test and train. So train is used for training the model in step 3, and test is to verify if the model has actually caught on to the patterns that I wanted it to for my use case. And lastly, depending on the test data and the accuracy of the model, maybe it hasn't got the patterns, maybe it has got the patterns, I need to improve the model. So this is a general outline of the analytics flow. And the use case for this is that now you're driving, and we, like Dr. Adarkar mentioned, that you have to remember to start a trip, stop a trip on the app right now. What we want to do is not be dependent on you remembering whether you should start a trip or not. So we want to automate that process. And for that, we are using sensors to understand in what vehicle are you traveling, so that we can only consider those trips in which you were in a car, because we're talking about auto insurance. So the objective is simple, that we need to identify the mode of transport and only consider those trips which are in car with the use of sensor data. So obviously we collect sensor data, the ones that we spoke of, accelerometer, magnetometer, gyroscope and a GPS. And once the raw data is in, a little bit of cleaning is required, after which we do some exploratory data analysis. Here is one of the examples of exploration where we are looking at a density plot for magnetometer. So the sensors that we spoke about, all of them are positional in nature. That means the data that comes from them is in the form of XYZ planes, all of them. So what I do is to normalize those and to understand if they are coming from different smartphones or depending on the position of the smartphone in your car, the way you put your phone, place your phone while driving, those XYZ values could be different for different users. So we can calculate the magnitude of these sensors. In this case, the blue line is a bus journey, and the orange line is the car journey. And we can see that there's a significant difference in the distribution of the two. And this is like an exploratory analysis that can be further used to make models. Another one here is we've gotten individual trip time series for different users performing different types of transport. So there is walking, car, train and bike. And if you can see, the walking trip has higher fluctuations compared to say car or train, because it kind of makes sense when you're either the phone is in your hand or it's in the pocket, there is certain amount of fluctuations that's happening. As compared to car or train, where there is more stability and you might not walk at a constant speed. So these are initial data explorations which gives us a sense of what kind of patterns might be there in the data. Not necessarily all of them would be able to classify, but a lot of these sensor data put together will give more context. We don't want to depend on one single variable for the classification. So this gives us an idea of the pattern, which is helpful in making features. So this is how the methodology for this use case goes. Like I mentioned earlier, we're collecting packets from the smartphones. That in basics is like a string of data of sensor X, Y, Z, another sensor X, Y, Z, and speed, heading, lat, long. That has to be cleaned and formatted. The raw data from sensors usually has a lot of exceptions, so those have to be handled. Next, like I showed you the two examples of data exploration. So once you have your enough data, you want to explore of what the data and what kind of patterns exist. It's not necessary that there will always be patterns. I know we're doing a lot of analytics, but if there is no pattern that exists in the data, even the best algorithm in the world cannot find it. So that's one thing that happens. Another thing that happens is a lot of people start doing these analyses, but then the data, there is no data check, data sanity check, if your data is the correct kind of data that you're collecting, or is it comparable data. Those are two stumbling blocks that sometimes happen. Once we are done with the exploration bit, we get a sense of we want to do feature engineering. What that means is, for example, you have a column in your data, say your birthday. However, to the computer, it's just a date. But if I were to convert that birth date column into an age column, then it would make a feature for the computer. Maybe it could classify that on the basis of age. It becomes one of the variables. Or maybe I just want to convert it to the months that you were born. Maybe there is some similarity between people born in the first half or the second half. We don't know. So we are making these date. We are manipulating data in such a way to find patterns. And lastly, once that this cleaning and the feature engineering exercise is complete, we are able to feed it to the algorithm, which I explained earlier. Maybe it could be supervised, unsupervised, even reinforcement for that matter. But these data formats become very important in this case. So another of the use case in a similar fashion, the methodology is, okay, now we've determined that you're traveling inside a car, but are you a passenger or a driver in the car? Because we're looking at your driving patterns, so obviously we don't want to consider those trips in which you are just a passenger. So the methodology remains the same, but the target variable changes. Earlier we were looking at what kind of mode of transport, so it could be a car, bike, train. Now we want to know whether you're a driver or a passenger. So the phones also have something called orientation sensors, which give you like, okay, you know what, right now maybe you picked up the phone, so there is some changes in your sensor or your texting. That's what we wanted to talk about, distracted driving, one of the biggest reasons for car crashes. This is another use case that I want to take you through. So basically, the idea is that when we collect more and more data about one particular user, we will be able to identify the driving pattern, a pattern that is very specific to one user. And if there is a sudden deviation from the norm of the way you drive, then we can send an SOS alert to an emergency contact. And lastly, this is where we want to cover a user adequately, meaning that there is a portfolio of lot of insurance products, and we want to build a recommendation engine on top of that that should be able to cover you adequately, so that your premiums are less and you're able to okay, that was just the last use case. That's about data at Samsung. Thank you so much.
For us, it's collection of data. Of course, what will happen after, you know, we
data privacy is, you know, in some countries is, we don't know, but the kind of markets or keywords chosen, data privacy and all that, not very important topics at the moment. Yeah.
Suppose the IoT devices are not installed, then what are the assets
that you are driving? IoT device is in the smart. It's in the smartphone. We don't want any.
I can't have any.
No. It's in the smartphone.
Yeah.
Okay, you can connect, and take that question.
Yeah, so the application is made in such a way that it can still collect offline data, and once when you get internet at your own convenience, it can calculate your safety score for you. So it does not need internet all the time. Correct. So it, as and when it gets data, it's able to. But you're able to see the scores while it does locally, like the scoring, the harsh acceleration and braking. You don't need. You can do, yes, that is done locally. You don't need internet for that.
Not
fine.
Yeah.
Does
it consider the condition of the roads?
We are getting to that. And in fact, Indonesia has, you know, lots of conflict. It's a big country and lots of islands. So there is terrorism, there is riots, there is earthquake zones and all that. So when we come to telematics policies, yes, we will do all that. Yeah, but we are getting data. So you can do anything provided there is data. Insurance companies are primary, I mean, you know, our initial success is with insurance companies. But there are courier companies which want to control their, delivery boys who are motorcycles. So they are also this one. Yeah. But so it's, let's see, again, we still do not have, okay, this insurance company, we still do not have claims data. Otherwise, we could, you know, in principle, this heart-breaking access in the five parameters which I said, their weights can be ascertained very, very beautifully provided we have their data. So that means could call and the access was because of, you know, the driver was sitting on a phone, or driver took a sharp turn, driver was scared. Okay? So exact weight, once we have claims data, you know, and we are waiting for 1 year because our application is, you know, auto insurance has 1 year of, you know, title. So we have, once we have claims data, we will be able to even get those rates. So let our, you know, the beauty is in this application, we say that let the data speak. So let the data tell us that, you know, the accident happened, you know, let insurance company tell us that the accident happened because of that. Then we can keep those rates.
Also, one more thing about that is the fact that it's not looking at one, while we talking about driving score in terms of policies, we're not looking at individual data points, it's an aggregation. So maybe, yes, there you made a wrong cut or something for some reason on the road condition, but over a period of, say we're looking at 6 months, that will not be a major impact on your score if you're driving properly for, you know, majority of the time.
We have at least six or seven users have taken that sharp turn because of their road condition. Cannot again give a vacation. Yes, that is possible. Yes, we can do that. No, this we have actually checked that because, you know, police stopping you or something, it's like this application doesn't really bother me. You, I mean, it seriously bothers you to take a call, or, you know, drive at 100 on residential highway, which are allowed, which are allowed to. Yes, it takes at this one. But this turn, see, the sharp turn at 50, okay, at least for India, these parameters, of course, we are not supposed to talk too much about the parameters because every user, every insurance company, every fleet manager can take this parameter. But we believe, you know, whatever American data we are using,
afraid about. I mean, Americans are very, very good at all this insurance calculation. I mean, a woman with red color card, sports card, pays double premium, etc. You know? So, or 6 times you drive, 2.4 times your claims increase, etc. You know? So, we want to create policies, I mean, you know, pay how you drive, pay as you drive, etc. Right? Or now this claim, these models are coming, you know, where you take the car, your mobile phone only unlocks the car, you know, your mobile application tells you that where the car is, you pick up the car from, you walk to the nearest car, the car is also unlocked and ignition is switched on the moment you switch on the application. And, you know, that much period you have to pay for insurance, right? So, pay, you know, as you drive. So all these new models are coming up and, you know, buffer insurance. Or, you know, Americans are very good at all this. Where you park your car, they ask you, you know, open place, you know, street parking or closed garage and all that. So, you know, premiums to pay. Now, it's a highly regulated industry. That's why anything that we do, we have to go to the regulators in these countries. Right? I mean, they, of course, the actuaries are very smart. I mean, you know, they calculate mortality and proper value of an asset or something very well. But all these extraneous factors, you know, which we have to introduce in the telematics policy, our CEO has to accompany the insurance company CEOs to the regulators. Now that is, you know, that we are not yet this one. I mean, there are people who claim collision detection and all that, but that requires camera. Now, this is what this our team to move asked us that, you know, can we get some you know, cameras fixed in our trucks wherever they, you know, wherever there's an accident. They have trucks going and taking those people and, you know, very time to start. There's an application of it called T-Rex.
T-Rex.
So, to do relaxed experience, okay, so, you know, that's a hardware device which is implanted and directly talk to the server. So, this air conditioned truck, okay, to monitor its driver, which goes to an accident spot and does an initial survey before the insurance agent sees that. So those are, you know, it will take all this anti-collision, you know, it will actually send something coming from front. I don't know what that. So they're talking about implementing this kind of devices, which will talk, which will record, even driver's behavior, this will record. Now this can be done for an employee or for a fleet, but not an insurance policy.
Maybe the last question, then we can continue our discussion.
How do you know that the customer is
talking about? So, there are certain OS mechanisms for Android and iOS that can detect a phone call.
I have another phone. Another phone, I am talking about another phone.
A primary and a second phone.
I mean, if you have 2.3 systems, I mean, we have been discussing now, you know, how to handle these 2.3 systems. So, a person can download, at the moment, a person can download one name and 2 phones. Okay, our CEO says allow
all of you,
as well you said. Yeah, yeah.
Can you capture the voice, because this is actually using, this is a unique voice for me.
I
I see this now, look at my human behavior kind of. See, 10 years ago, because, you know, distinguish between a calf, a puppy and an elephant was so difficult for a computer. Now if you Facebook, it tells me that you are with XYZ person, right, already, the moment I upload a photograph. So I think AI will pick up. I mean, AI has reached, in, at least in the industry I came from, it recognizes voice, you know, reading from language. Our input is car data and it tells you input is not for itself. So we should be able to do this to screen. I mean, people like Natasha would be able to code such things.
So before, I think we can continue, before we end, these are some of the things which Satya has told me to do.